Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... Recently, a doctor friend of mine gave me this tidbit of information which seemed incredibly interesting, that the modern word for cancer comes from the ancient Latin word for crab. And a crab is a sea creature with a central body and little arms coming out. And what used to happen in the Middle Ages, when people used to cut people open and they had died of something, they'd cut them open and they'd see a central mass of cancerous cells which had spread its tentacles out into other organs. So it indeed looked like a crab. Now, cancer, as we know now, is not a pathogen that has emerged from outside our body. It's a miscoding of a cell's central DNA. So the cells themselves are using the machinery to keep alive, but not to keep in check with the rest of the body. They've actually gone on their own independent quest for immortality, these cells. So rather than understanding that they have to be mortal as part of a bigger mortal being, these cells have become immortal and have begun to actually have their own separate quest for life, and actually their quest for life is actually threatening our quest for life. That's cancer. So it's an interesting area. Quibbling about the origin of words seems a pointless affair, because every word has an origin. Who really needs to know where it comes from? So you've got a car, and it's technology. It's important that you can drive it. It's not necessarily important to people that they understand the technologies, decisions, the quests that come in, like who built it, the environmental cost. But overall, if you have the population not interested, say, in the origin of cars or sneakers or things like that, they can't actually unpick the story of their life. They're, say, in sneakers, they may be wearing cheap clothes, but they cannot sort of understand that this buying cheap clothes will eventually lead to political instability and strife overseas if you don't pay people enough for it, or if you have a car and it burns diesel fuel and the diesel fuel has particulates, that car will eventually kill more people through air pollution and, say, the spreading of lead, or the degradation of the environment, than it would actually through actually running people over. But if you don't question the origin, you don't question ask these big questions, and if you don't ask these big questions, you can actually quite lead a very satisfying, if not strangely shallow, unsatisfying life. It's a very gratifying life, but not very satisfying. So, like, the origin of words really a part of the conceptual machinery that gets thrown into the big pot, which ultimately, we, at a particular point in time, we are doing a certain set of things, and we have to actually ask, well, how did we get to here? And a lot of people just don't ask how they get to here, and a lot of people accept words and positions at face value. And you can sort of pull this apart a bit, that if they feel comfortable accepting at things at face value, that's one thing. But if they show sort of resistance to pulling the situation apart for various reasons, because they're just simply because they haven't been trained, or they haven't mucked around with people who have said, hey, stop for a moment, this word cancer, there's an origin in the word of it, and it's got a history for it. And so what I'd like to do is just cover off a few other words that I've come across, and like, I sort of know why I'm interested in the origin of words, because it goes into how people use them and the assumptions they have about themselves and about the words. It's not whether the word, in fact, actually operates the way it should. That's, I think, people who are actually using them are very intensely interested. It's just whether the people who use them have are asking deeper questions. The deeper questions are like, how did we come to this particular situation, or what's the origin of things? So it's a sort of very interesting thing on a certain number of levels. The word that I'd like to mention in this, let's look at the origin of words and how it impacts people and thinking, and whether people knew about the origin of a word, they wouldn't take it as a hard and fast, or they have a more nuanced view of things. What I want to talk about is the word syllabus. And my overall research writing education papers. So I'd write an education paper and I'd just methodically research everything right through. I researched the word curriculum, which comes from path or route. So there was a curriculum, a path that the chariots went around in circles, which is sort of an overall view that you have charities, they run around your chariot race and they come out the other end and they don't re-enter, or they might re-enter until they actually win the race of curriculum. Circular idea. Syllabus was an interesting thing. Where was the origin of the word syllabus? And the syllabus is rather interesting because it's a word which is equivalent to a cancerous word. It's a word which has mutated and has developed a life of its own. And so I find the interesting thing that you hear that cancer has got an origin. The word syllabus is actually a cancerous word, and it's got a life of its own. So what happened somewhere in the 13th century, sort of the late Middle Ages, a monk was transcribing a script in Greek. And we may know the actual the text that he was transcribing. Now, it may surprise you to know that some of the texts were the texts of great people. There was a lot of texts which nowadays you'd say, what's this? And people would just, because it was ancient, they would just transcribe it. And I'm thinking of the letters to Atticus. And these are often referenced, and when you're tracking down things, you often come across this complete script which has been held from the ancients called the Letters to Atticus. And what when you actually go in and actually read some of the Latin of the Letters to Atticus, this is basically someone just giving domestic instructions back to his household. Tell slave X to put the cat out. Make sure you've stocked this. It's sort of very, very banal stuff, but these people were laboriously copying it. So there was, this is an origin story in that the people used to copy things, but not necessarily understand. So the monk who was up the top of the library making a copy of something. So basically, we've got a copy machine, a printer, internet in the ancient world. You'd see a big abbey sitting on top of a mountain or on an island with a floodplain around it, all these fantastic things. But essentially what that abbey was a giant copying machine, a giant Xerox machine. And as it happens, this monk misspelt the word table of contents, and his misspelling was the word syllabus. So syllabus was word for table of contents. It got misspelt, and scholars, remember that it is scholastic, and so in a certain sense I've got a scholastic view in terms of I go back and check the origin of things and cross-reference things and try and see scholarship. So scholarship is a Middle Ages view of intellectual pursuit where you look at the various texts, compare the original texts, and there are certain texts which are considered gold standard texts, and then you compare them, and if you see a difference between them, you can know the mind of God. You know, this complexity is a sort of way of signal analysis, you know, a high-grade signal analysis of these texts. It was information, and you'd look at the information, and if God had actually ticked off certain texts, he'd leave clues by comparing the different texts, and certain texts came in and caused all sorts of things. So there was a big thing on copying the text, and so this person miscopied the word table of contents, and it may have just stopped there if someone said that's a misspelling for the word table of contents. However, scholars came in and said, what does the word syllabus mean? And began to actually speculate what the word syllabus meant, and argue about its actual origins of the word syllabus without actually getting the true origin. And so this is a word which has come to us, which has been invented by mistake, and a lot of people are very committed. The syllabus now is in Australian, enshrined in Australian law. You must teach the syllabus, or the, sorry, the, well, really the syllabus is a, you must stick to teach the curriculum, but the syllabus, you must have a syllabus, which is a itinerary of your curriculum. You know, you're going to go through the curriculum, which is a multi-dimensional stuff, and so you can go through it not in a linear way. You can bounce around it, and so you had the word syllabus. So there's a whole heap of confusion across there, and of course, in the insight of ultimately the mindset of asking, how do you come from here? Ever get a chance to actually take people aside and say, do you know the word? And they just look at you absolutely strangely. Get out of here. Aren't you connected to the situation at hand? Part of their view of being connected to the situation at hand is not being connected, I think is a fundamental mistake, is not being connected to everything, i.e. the view, I think it is the view that, that if they tend to make mistakes or find it a bit overwhelming, considering all the different connections, you can optimize your existing connection to the current situation by limiting or making assumptions. And so they will make assumptions that a syllabus is a known word. It's a real word. It's reality. It's not a human construct. That's a bit too much. If you do that, you waste valuable time thinking, whereas it's taking all your effort just to think of how to practically produce something within a period of time, which is true, but they'll wind up in many cases spending 50, 60 years of their life, quite literally 60 years of their life, doing the same thing without ever breaking out of this loop. There's just a few other words I'd like to cover as to do with, I suppose, medical words, albumin, and that's basically the major globular protein in blood plasma. So if blood plasma's got this sort of this slightly thicky stickiness, albumin actually refers to a globular protein, and it refers to the same sort of protein as seen in egg white. Albumin, so alba means white, and it means the white protein. So that's interesting, but it has a very interesting use in the blood. It is a protein food, which is like it's a store of energy in the body. So if there's a protein it wants to eat, the most convenient protein which the body starts to eat first is the albumin. Starts to break that down for sugar, but it's got this very interesting structure of I think I haven't prepared this. I should have gone back and looked at it, but I think 12 to 13 disulfide bonds. So in your amino, there's a certain class of I think two amino acids which have sulfur, and if they're the two sulfurs, the two amino acids are structured together, that can form a disulfide or sulfur to sulfur bond across amino acids, which means that your molecule has this folds up and then has these links across it, Now, what happens is when you heat up egg white, the molecule vibrates so much it unspreads and reforms disulfide bonds between different proteins. So it cross massive forms a massive cross-linking. This massive cross-linking leads to a rubbery egg white, similar to the how disulfide bonds in actually a rubber band form. You galvanize something by adding sulfur bonds, increasing sulfur bonds in rubber protein, and the rubber protein can stretch, uncoil and stretch, but it's linked by these disulfide bonds. So the disulfide bonds and the actual array of bonds means that chemically the effective acidity of albumin, acidity is not quite the right word, the ability to take up ions can change with a drop of a hat. You can actually, it's one of these things which can take up, I suppose, 3 to over 15 sodium ions, depending on your chemical makeup. So what happens is when it goes out into the body, it draws up sodium ions, and its ability to suck in sodium ions means that the sodium ions migrate from the cells and bodies onto the albumin, and then then it's transported around the body, and at the kidneys, the process in the kidneys pushes the sodium ions out of the body, and so you have a sodium ion gradient, and that leads to an osmotic pressure. So if you have a membrane and you put water either side of this salt permeable, a water permeable but not salt permeable water membrane, if you actually put salt on one side, the actual ions themselves attract the water, and the actual water will tend to pull inside, and you'll see that the water level will rise ever so slightly on the sodium side. So the sort of the reverse is happening. You've got a blood pressure necessary to go through the resistance and pneumatic resistance of not pneumatic, that would be air, hydrostatic resistance. Hydrostatic's not the correct word. The thin capillaries. That would mean that your blood pressure would put too much fluid pressure on the rest of your body. So what happens is that you get a pressure reduction into the rest of the cells and bodies by the actual transport of sodium ions out of the body into the albumin through the kidneys. So this is an interesting thing that once the albumin and this sodium transport stops, you get edema, and there's the swelling of the body. So often when you have a operation or that you disturb the body, say your liver, say for instance that your liver doesn't function, so your liver cleans and grooms the albumin molecules coming through, the little globular molecule. And it's really rather interesting that certain drugs stick and slide into the albumin, and then so the albumin's also like a garbage truck, so it takes molecular it's sort of like a garbage Velcro or fly stuff, so drugs and other things. It's got a large protein surface with an array of water, oil, and various other attractive areas in its molecule, which of course it can actually contort and take in sodium, release sodium for it. But the interesting thing is that the warfarin molecule really slides straight into it and is taken throughout the body straight to the liver, where the liver cleans up the albumin. So there's no point just the albumin being cleaner. It's actually got to be able to be processed such that it transports waste in and out of the body. Another another sort of similar process is the hemoglobin molecule. So its ability to actually emit. So it's a sort of hemoglobin is a similar type of molecule, but it rather than works with waste products, works with oxygen. And it undergoes certain processes where it will dispense oxygen. Now, it will bind oxygen at low acidity, but in high acidity, where cells are respired and actually given out their carbon dioxide, it will release the oxygen. So it sort of detects cellular respiration by monitoring the increase of acidity, and when it sees there's acid there, it releases more oxygen. And of course, you've got carbolase, which is the hemoglobin is bound in the hemoglobin molecule. The heme, so there's a heme molecule in the hemoglobin protein, and that is there's a large number of those proteins built up inside the red blood cells, so that's the process. But besides the hemoglobin, there's another enzyme called carbolase, which has the effect of rapidly converting carbon dioxide to a carbolic acid. So carbolase, if rather than carbon dioxide building up as a gas inside your body, converts it and dissolves it into an acid. And that increased acidity reverses the opposite area in the lungs. So when it's exposed to air, the carbon dioxide goes out of your blood. Your hemoglobin then in the reduced acidity absorbs oxygen, and then the process reverses, giving you an effect of carbon dioxide oxygen. So that's with the heme molecule, but the albumin is a fantastic molecule that has the role of reducing the or increasing the osmotic pressure differentiation, and that osmotic pressure differentiation, when that's working correctly, draws sodium ions out of the tissue, and then when the sodium ions are removed from the tissue, the water follows it along. And so the album process of cleaned album, obviously if you dirty up the album with toxins and waste and stuff like that, you'll get swelling. So it's a very interesting view to get into it. So let's do a review of these things. One is the cancer and the origin of the word crab, and whether people take how do they take that word? Do they take it as such a shocking word, as an absolute word, or do they have the analytical nous to actually see this as a word, and how do we use it? And asking those questions about how do we use a word also reflects the question, your ability to ask the question of how did we get here, and your ability to just simply ask questions without interaction with task at hand or the politics at hand. So similarly, asking the origin of words is a very irritating thing to do. It's just not the thing to do. And similarly, asking how did we arrive at this particular situation is, you know, that's a bit confronting. But you may as well ask them. We also cover the word syllabus, which is a very interesting word, in that people who are very, I suppose, not very studied, but very cops on the beat and want to enforce it, just cannot understand that it's not, there's no particular point in, you know, I'm not trying to win a point by pointing out what the origin of the word syllabus is, but it's a damn interesting key to unlock deeper thinking. And then the final word, albumin, which is the white blood of plasma. So in, I've forgotten what the origin of the word. There's two different situations where you get plasma. Plasma is the clear stuff. So you get the clear stuff under two circumstances. If you take blood and it clots, it has a clotting factor, the blood cells will start to stick to each other. And as they stick to each other, they will precipitate out and form a clot. At the bottom of the test tube and above the test tube will be this liquid. I've got to remember what that liquid is. That can be different from where you put an anti-clotting factor in with the blood, and then you put it in a centrifuge, and then the heavier cells go to the red cells go down to the bottom, and then your plasma may be up at the top. So I really have forgotten the difference between those two things. And this is my overall podcasting for rehab, is to just open up the memory pathway. Some of my memory isn't quite where it was before. So my brain's come back a little bit different, I think, after several anaesthetics. And of course, it's sort of like two aspects. There's the deep memory recall, and then there's sort of the strategic thinking about how those memories are linked together. So again, really getting into it, asking how did we get to this word, using this word, how do we get to this situation, how do people ask about how do we get to these situations. So it's creating a situation where people can ask how they get there. So there's the origin of words, the origin of situations, the origin of yourself. It's all linked together. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.